When we were first doing this with people, we had a couple of people that didn't try it, who we know pretty well, and they were saying, oh, that's too simple to work. And, you know, a lot of us have been heavily taught that over time that in order to get some kind of change in your behavior, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of pain, right? And if you think about the whole idea of psychotherapy over the years, it's, you go to the therapist for years to try to solve a problem. And even then, it didn't always work all the time, you know, those kind of things. I remember years ago, after I'd been involved with NLP for about about 8 years, and this woman had, I went back to the graduate school that I did, and I made a presentation, and I talked to the professor there that would actually gone through with me as a student, and she said, you know, I know you're really into NLP, but I think it's just a quick fix. And I said, well, it can be quick. I said, but I don't know if it's a quick fix, because I know people who've had, for example, a phobia that changed it like at least 8 years ago, and it still changed. And, you know, that included me. So, I said, I know it lasts, even if it's quick. And she said, well, I don't care if it lasts, it's still a quick fix. And I think I went into a trance for a while. But she basically had a belief that if it didn't take a lot of hard work and a lot of mental cognition and a lot of stuff like that, it didn't count. No pain, no gain. You know, if you... anyway.
So. It was funny, when we were coming up with the tagline for dynamic spin release, and we wanted to call it a fast and effective approach for releasing negative thought patterns. And our webmaster, who we were trying to get this in the banner, was arguing with us, because she said, well, me and my husband don't think the change happens fast like that, so we don't like the tagline. And I'm like, I don't care, just get it up, you know. But it's just funny how that, you know, people have that belief that it has to be this difficult process.
It's not difficult, it's not good.
Yeah,
well,
no pain,
and by the
no
way,
gain.
I just want to make a comment. Yeah, Marilyn?
Well, I took my son to a psychiatrist to work through some of his issues, and then I took him to an NLP practitioner who took care of it in, you know, 3 sessions where we'd gone on and on and on and on with the psychiatrist. I look at it like a weed, where the psychiatrist worked at it, cutting down to here, but the NLP got to the root and it was gone.
Pulled up by the
roots. That's a nice metaphor.
That's a nice metaphor.
Yeah, that's lovely.
It's
yeah.
Yeah,
thank
By
you
the way,
for sharing that.
With this and those of you in the NLP training, change happens fast, not slow. And one of my favorite lessons on that when I was first getting into NLP is I was working with the woman with the allergy process, NLP allergy process, and I did the process with her and it was better, but it wasn't complete. And so I saw her again, it was in a workshop, and we found there was a trauma underneath that. What the trauma was is when she was a little girl, 3 years old, her 6-year-old brother picked up a cat and tossed it at her. And the cat didn't like that and it scratched her pretty bad. And so she had a phobia of cats and an allergy to cats. And so how long did it take for that phobia to come on? It didn't take months and weeks of some kind of cognition for that phobia to come on. It happened really fast. So why wouldn't the change happen really fast as well? It only makes sense that it would. And so change happens quickly. So that's why some of the techniques like the fast phobia technique that you'll all learn next weekend, those of you in the practitioner, and is fast, or why this is fast. Speed is often the driver to make the change happen.
So there's 7 key elements that make up dynamic spin release. The first one you already know, which is metaphors, archetypes, and symbols. And so the way we define dynamic spin release is it's all about working with the universal archetype of spin and the psychology of metaphors, archetypes, and symbols. And you've all personally had the opportunity to experience the power of these symbols. And of course, these are all coming from your own unconscious mind, which makes it all the more powerful. And in some instances, maybe from the collective unconscious mind, which is what those greater archetypes are.
Milton Erickson, who's widely considered the probably the most effective psychotherapist of the last century, used to, and who was also a model for NLP, outside of his office had this table, and he had all these objects on the table. And people would go in, and he'd work with them, and he would give them a suggestion on the way out to look over these objects, and they would find one that had special meaning to them, and to select it and take it home with them, and to ponder it, and then bring back their ideas to the next session. And he said invariably, almost everybody would choose something, find great meaning in it, and of course their unconscious mind is giving it all this meaning, and it would become a real positive association for them to create change with. So he worked a lot with metaphor. A lot of shamans work with metaphor, you know, the whole idea of different animals that you might think of as power animals, or the metaphor of becoming, when we were working with modeling shamans, you know, they'd have you meditate and become the river, for example, and what's that like? And so this idea of metaphor is it's an ancient one, and it's a very powerful way of creating change. It's the way we tend to think and make sense of the world. So for your unconscious mind to be offering you these powerful metaphors is really nice. Even if you don't know what it means, often the change is there anyway, because the real change happens at the level of the subconscious level, not just the conscious mind.
The second key element is submodalities.
Submodalities are the qualities of your internal images or sounds or feelings. For example, a picture can be dim or bright, and that's going to be a different coding. And we have a couple of submodalities here. If you take a problem and move it further away, what happens to it? Think of something that could be unpleasant, mildly unpleasant. Can y'all think of something like that? Actually, think of a food that you really think's yucky. If you had to take a bite of it, you go, ugh. Can you think of one of those? And now take it and look at it. Move it a little closer and what happens? It gets worse, right? So take it and move it far away. So if you take this problem out of you and then you move it further away, you're getting some distance from it. And as you get distance from it, you're creating that possibility to change it. So these kind of submodality differences, like moving it further away or draining the color out or reversing the spin, are all going to make, they're all powerful changes in and of themselves.
Well, and the images that you're making up with your mind with the gifts or the symptom are submodalities as well.
Now, a client never needs to understand that, because it'll just automatically happen if you do it with them.
What we wanted to do was demystify dynamic spin release, because when we started working with it, it seemed so magical. And so we wanted to demystify it and deconstruct it and understand why it works so well. So that's why we came up with these seven elements. The third one is overlapping. And overlapping is a NLP term. And what it is it's when you overlap from one modality to the other. So for example, when you have the person think of a feeling, notice where you feel it in your body, that's a feeling. Then you pull it out, ask them to make a visual representation. Now they're going from kinesthetic to visual. They're overlapping from kinesthetic to a visual representation.
And just that in and of itself is a powerful intervention. Does anybody here have a little headache or anything? So we can do a quick demo. Diane, you've got one?
Yep.
Everybody else, see if you can find some sensation in your body that you're not real happy with, and it wouldn't matter if it disappeared. And so get us, come on up if
yeah,
you
come
want.
On up.
If you don't mind, then we'll just show you another kind of processor.
I'm curious, on a scale of one to 10, what's the level of sensation, with 10 being the highest?
Right now it's about a 7.
Oh, okay.
Pretty good one. Where do you feel it?
I've kind of been going back before.
So where is
right
it?
Here.
Right here. Okay. Well, imagine you could pull it out. And get it out and look at it. What does it look like?
It it looks like a band, like a band, and it's kind of orange in color.
Okay. It's an orange edges. Band. Now, if you make it brighter, what happens? Make it a little bit brighter. Do you get more intense or less intense?
It's more intense.
Okay. Now, if you make it dimmer. Okay. And you can see kind of a little bit more relaxation. So look at it. Look at that. And see that. See it. And let it get brighter just for a second and then change into a totally different image, like a seagull flying out over the sunset, over the ocean. And watch the seagull just fade into the distance. Then let it go. How's it now?
Take a deep breath first.
How do you feel here now? Same or different?
Different. Cooler.
Cooler, okay.
Yeah, sure.
So that would be overlapping from a kinesthetic to a visual thing. We could also do it to a sound. So, again, get a sense
Take
of it.
Take any remaining residual. Leave
any residual here. If it were a sound, what would it sound like?
Pull it out.
Well, wait, before you even pull it out, what does
like
it sound like?
Like a clap.
Like a clap.
Yep.
Okay, if the clap gets louder, is it more or less?
Yeah.
Okay, well, pull out that clapping sound. Get it out there. And what's your favorite? What's a favorite song of yours or favorite group?
Paco Bell.
Ah, okay. So pull this out and hear the clap and change the clap into Paco Bell. And get the Paco Bell getting louder. Not too loud, but loud in a pleasant way. Really get into the melody of that. And just let that go. So that's an example of overlap. So if you're overlapping, and my sort of theory on that is if you have something represented as a feeling, that you're it's the way you're aware of it, and you change it to a different representation, it's still there, but you're representing it differently. So how's it now?
Yeah, it's down about a 4.
Down to about a 4.
Okay.
Now if we do the spin, we're doing a lot more with it. So I'd urge you to take a minute and spin that out. Actually, let's do it. Pull it out now, whatever's left. Get it out there by the wall.
Yeah.
What's it look like now?
Now it's kind of like a...
You're shrinking for...
Yeah, it's like a cloud, kind of a small...
Which way is it spinning?
It should kind of go like this.
Okay. Well, slow it down. Get it going the other way. Get it going faster and 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 faster. Get it going so fast it just disappears. And in its place will be a gift from your unconscious mind, a healing gift that you need right now.
It's a pillow.
A pillow, huh? Maybe you need some sleep.
It's like a pillow.
By the way, well, so get a sense of that. Do you want to send that out or bring it in?
I'd like to bring that in.
Okay, bring in that nice, comfortable,
soft,
pillowy feeling.
Comfy pillow.
But don't go to sleep in our training.
That's refreshing, bringing it in.
How's that feel?
Yeah, that feels good.
How's it now?
Yeah, it's like a 2 or maybe just a residual.
Yeah. Another thing you could do with it, is there any residual at all?
Yeah. Like just a
Can
shadow.
I help you remove it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I touch you a little bit? Okay. Okay, watch out.
Cool. Wow.
Okay. It's more the shamanic way of doing it. But.
Thank you.
It's kind of a.
But that's also a submodality change because those were flinging it out really fast. And
that was
you can,
actually an overlap, too.
It's an overlap in it. So it's surprising.
Did you touch her?
Just
oh, okay. I thought maybe you touched her arm, too.
Oh, I probably touched her arm. But that's like being more with you here.
So overlapping, and sometimes that can be a hard one to understand, but I think Tim demonstrating it gives you a clear representation of how you can overlap from kinesthetic to visual or from auditory to visual. So it's just that, or even from one auditory sound, you can overlap to another auditory sound.
Virginia Satir, who is the developer of family therapy and also a model for NLP, used to do this kind of overlapping with couples a lot. Because she'd often find that they have problems where, say, the wife would be very kinesthetic and the husband's very visual. And so he's saying things like, look, you're not even looking at me when I'm talking. And she says, and you leave everything messed around the house. I go home and there's piles of junk everywhere. What a mess you make. And you leave things laying around and it just drives me crazy. And I, you know, I'd see this and I see that and I say, yeah. And she'd say, oh, well, it's so comfortable here. And, you know, all you want to do is watch TV and, you know, you never try to, you know, feel things the way I do. And so they're both caught in different ways of thinking. So Virginia would look, maybe look at the wife and say, do you know that when he sees piles of things around the house, it would be like you laying in a bed full of cracker crumbs. So he puts it in the system she's representing it in at that moment. And then she goes, ooh, I wouldn't like that. And, but then she has a better idea of what he's dealing with. And then he might do the same thing for, you know, both, she'd do it in both directions. But it's a way of overlapping from one system to another.
By the way, if you think about the whole idea of spin, spin in of itself can be a metaphor, an archetype, or a symbol. It's also a submodality. So if you look at some of the early writings on submodalities in NLP, you'll see that not only were they incorporating brightness or dimness or distance or size, but spin was often one of those lower level ones, but it wasn't mentioned. So spin in of itself is a submodality. The third element is overlapping. The fourth one is an obvious one, which is creative visualization and imagination. So you're using your brain or who you're working with is using the creative aspects of their brain. You're using the creative aspects of your brain to generate these images and these symbols, and it's a form of visualization and using your imagination, which is why I think children love this so much, because it's like pretending, it's like imagining. And so this is one of the reasons why I think it works so well with children, and sometimes children can do it even more easier than adults.
And Wayne Dyer is often, you all know who he is, right? And often says, you know, imagination is what separates us from the other beings on the planet. And I don't know if that's totally true or not, but we've had dogs and cats, and I'm not sure that they're really making up what their next day is going to be like. Although sometimes I wonder, because they've got something planned for us when we get home. But you know, do they really create and invent things? And you don't see inventive behavior so much; you see repetitive behavior.
The fifth one is language patterns of influence, or hypnotic language patterns, or even Milton model. So in a way, you're directing people with your language. And it was funny because that early on, that was one of the critiques that we got on this, is they said, well, you're being too directive, you know, the way you're directing people. And it's like, well, so what? You know, it has a hypnotic quality to it. And so we would like to think that the roots of dynamic spin release are going to be found in Ericksonian hypnosis. They're going to be found in Jungian psychotherapy. They're going to be found in NLP.
And so
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead.
Hypnosis involves what you call creating a yes set. So when you have somebody go into a trance, you say, just close your eyes. And if they close their eyes, then they're saying, okay, that's an agreement I'm making with you. Now relax your eyes. That's another agreement. So a good hypnotist is trying to help create a relationship where there's a whole series of agreements. Once somebody said yes behaviorally a whole bunch of times, then they get down to the new change that they want, and they're saying yes to that as well. You know, in sales, they call it a yes set. Yeah. You know, have you ever been to a really good salesperson, and they'll go, well, you kind of liked that red car, didn't you? And you go, yes. And it felt good when you sat in it, yes. So they get all these yeses, and do you want to buy a yeah, you know. Because you've already, it's really convincing yourself of what you've done.
Now, there was a lot of thought go ahead.
I was going to say, and if you ask somebody to go through a series of things with the dynamic spin, in a way, it's a kind of induction. And then, of course, there are patternings within it. If I say, which way is it spinning, what's the presupposition? And most people will find a way. Maybe if it wasn't, it is now.
I was just going to say that. It's interesting. This is the first time we have trained together without a translator in about four months. So we've done about 35 days of training. And when you have a translator, and she's translating, then you have time to think about what you're going to say, and we don't interrupt each other. I notice we're doing that a little bit more
today.
So, okay, so number six is spin. And actually, I wanted to go back to language patterns and just quickly touch on one thing, which is I liked Kevin's comment yesterday because he said that sometimes when he's working with corporate people or in an executive environment, that he has adjusted the language a little bit. So maybe instead of saying, see a gift, you're saying, see a symbol, or...
What is your symbol that is the solution to what we're dealing with? The helping symbol.
So language is a key part. You can be directive with your language. And then number six is, you know, of course, spin is a key part. And as I said earlier, spin's a metaphor. It's a submodality. It's a quantum function of our universe. It's a cosmological function of our universe. It's an archetype. So spin is a key component as well.
And it's what you're made up of. Right now, you're a bunch of spinning things if you chunk it down far enough.
And then the last one is, and it's funny because when it's the collective unconscious, the collective unconscious mind, the non-locality of consciousness in the greater field, and we had some debate whether to put this in. So for a long time, we just had six elements, but we had the opportunity to teach a dynamic spin release in Romania. And afterwards, we had the opportunity, the guy that sponsored us in was a psychiatrist, and he offered to take us on a vacation to Transylvania. And so as you can imagine, it was interesting being driven around Transylvania by a psychiatrist visiting Dracula's old stomping grounds. There was a real guy, by the way, Vlad Dracul, who was a prince. There's this long story. I won't get into it. But point being is... we were still in the developmental phases with the DSR and with Catalin being a psychiatrist and so into Jungian psychotherapy in the greater field. He really thought that this idea of the collective unconscious and field was a key part of what we were doing, because when you toss these things out into the universe, you really are dealing with that bigger field. And we found that sometimes when you begin spinning things out, there's a synchronicity that begins to happen.
And this idea of the study of consciousness is something that's really blossoming right now. Some of you have probably seen a lot that's been done with that, you know, from popular people like Deepak Chopra to, you know, some real hardcore science type people. This idea of that, how many of you have had ideas come to you that you think, where did that come from? In the minute you're talking, or sometimes I'll be presenting and I'll say something, I'll go, wow, where did that come from? It's not like I recall reading it or anything, but it's also somehow doesn't always feel like it just comes from my own experiences. And you've all had those experiences, right? And the idea is that we're part of a greater field where there's a lot of information out there. And there's more and more research that's, to me, is exciting research. Is it's not all of our thoughts aren't emanating for our brain. Our brain might be much more like an antenna bringing in what's in the bigger mind all around us. So we may be more of a receptor than we are, you know, our brain doing all of it. And there's so much good scientific evidence for that now that it's pretty impressive. There's a great book just written by Larry Dossey, if some of you may know who he is. He's a former physician from Houston, and he's done a lot of work on, you know, the mind and the brain and that kind of thing. He just wrote a book called The One Mind, or...
So,
I think it's called The One Mind. But look up Larry Dossey, Dossey, if you're interested in this. He's pulled together a lot of the information on consciousness and this idea of non-locality. And there's so much good evidence now that's nice, good scientific evidence for it that it's really creating a lot of waves in how we think about our humanness.
Another great book is called The Field by Lynn McTaggart. And...
it's more of a popular type book.
But what we've noticed is that when you do start using dynamic spin release in your life, you'll start experiencing synchronicities, or you'll have solutions that get presented to you in a magical way. For example, I keep talking about our friend Tom Gorley because he, you know, just passed away a couple months ago. But he had hurt his hip really bad at some point, and I noticed when he was resourcing one of our seminars, he was kind of limping around. And so he asked me if I would do DSR with him. So we just did the basic, you know, one that you guys learned on the first day. But he said that the very next day he was at the drugstore and he found some type of over-the-counter something or another, and he took it and it completely knocked out the pain. And he felt like that because we did the spin, that solution was somehow presented to him. And we found that to happen, and we found some even almost strange things happen. You can use this if you lose things. Like I went shopping one day and I lost my wallet. And you know, it was one of those days where I think I went to two grocery stores, and you know, I was running all these different errands. And so I was at my wit's end because the wallet had already been lost for 3 days now, and you all know how worrisome that can be. So I finally spun out the wallet. What I did is I took all my feelings about the worry of the wallet being lost and all of the anxiety about it, and I spun all of that out. And about 10 minutes later, an image of Whole Foods came up, and I thought, oh my gosh, I had completely forgot that I'd even gone there. And that was the one place out of like six places that I didn't call. So of course I called them, brown wallet, pink leather on the inside, and they're like, yep, we've got it. And so we've, and here's one other very weird story, and you're gonna think we've just fallen off the cliff here, but we were getting ready to fly somewhere because we fly a lot. And so we had our carry-on luggage, and you all know how nice that is to be able to take it on the plane and not have to check it. And so we were just getting ready to board, and all of a sudden the handle on mine, it broke and it wouldn't go down. And I was sitting there and I was pushing and struggling, and for like 20 minutes, you know, and I thought, if I don't get this thing to go down, I'm going to have to check it. It's going to, you know, be a hassle, this and that. So finally we spun it out. And sure enough, as soon as we did that, the handle just popped right down, and it's been fine ever since. So we've used
that,
it.
You know, yeah. We weren't trying to fix the suitcase. We're trying to deal with her frustration. As soon as she dealt with her frustration, she went and just. So that might have been it too, right?
Well, it seems like pendulum power is a form of spinning too. I mean,
Well, when we were exploring this, there was a physician named Dorr in the Netherlands, and she was experimenting with taking pain and moving a pendulum over it, finding out which way it spun, and then doing a pendulum, and it works pretty well. You can create a vortex around something too. So a lot of people report doing things like eliminating skin tags and stuff like that by just imagining, finding out which way they spin, and then spinning, imagine a spinning energy around that.
Or like one woman that had one of those warts that just kept, you know, she would have it removed and it would keep coming back. So she just kept imagining like a golden circle where it was and kept spinning it. And apparently it, she wrote me this long story about it that was way more information than I wanted to read. But but she said that it finally it just fell off and it never grew back. And
well, Chris was walking one day and turned her ankle and began to just spin it as you... that moment, right?
Yep. So there's a lot you can do with this. We encourage you to read through the booklet because we will not even be able to get to half the material that's in there, and there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Scott? Yeah.
I was just asking if anyone do it on reverse aging.
On what?
Reverse aging. Well, what you take is, think about your representation of aging and what that is, and then try reverse spinning that. Yeah.
So a question was on reverse aging. Yeah, we do that. Tim's actually 90 and I'm 75. No, we haven't done that, but you know, it doesn't hurt to try.
You know, sometimes you think, what are the, it's like there are a lot of solutions, but maybe we haven't asked all the right questions. So you might think that through. How would you reverse aging? Yes.
Well, I heard this one about Lyme disease.
Yeah, there's a woman who has dedicated her practice to using dynamic spin release with Lyme disease, and has had just incredible results.
Especially with the symptoms. She's also, she wrote us a letter. She also works with Lou Gehrig's disease a lot, with ALS. She's a health practitioner.
She's a theoretical physicist and a health practitioner.
Hey, where is she? Because I have a lady that has two kids.
We'll put you in contact with
her.
She's
up in the Northwest.
She's in the Northwest.
Portland or something.
We should take a break.
I think it's about time for a break, and then we're going to work with limiting beliefs.
So we'll move into limiting beliefs when you come back.